They truly are changing lives. Visit DOREUSA.com right now or WBAP.com keyword door. It's a life-changing decision.
We are all amazed at how little our dollars will purchase today. The U.S. paper dollar has lost over 75% of its purchasing power since 1964. Did you know that over 5,000 years ago, 1 ounce of gold would purchase 350 loaves of bread? Today, the same facts hold true. Historically, rare coins have performed even better. Find out more. Call American Platinum Exchange at 1-877-281-APEX or go to WBAP.com and type in the keyword platinum.
Hi, this is Gary McNamara. You're listening to the News and Talk of Texas, WBAP Online. We're taking a short break right now. We'll be back to our program in just a moment. Thanks for listening to News Talk 820, WBAP.
You have a chance of thunderstorms rolling in late in the day, and looks like some colder temperatures will arrive by the weekend. For Texas Cable News, I'm meteorologist Roger Berry on the Weather Leader News Talk 820 WBAP.
Right now we have cloudy skies, 39 degrees at Weather Center 820. I'm Amy Shadroff on the News Leader News Talk 820 WBAP.
If you're talking about it, we're talking about it. You're listening to the News and Talk of Texas. This is the Mark Davis Show on News Talk 820 WBAP. And we welcome you on this Wednesday, January 24th, 2007. Busy day. Let's hop in. Coming up at 9:35, he used to run the Democratic Party. He used to be the Democratic Party chairman. Terry McAuliffe, and he's out with a book, and he's sort of unshackled from the title of DNC chairman, so he can tell us whom he likes, whom he favors, and maybe whom he doesn't among the large crop of Democrat candidates, and maybe he'll give us some inside poop on what it was like to be there for the ascendancy of the Clintons and what he thinks about the latest one to run for president. Terry McAuliffe, 9:35. 10:06, Congressman Pete Sessions will join us with his thoughts on State of the Union. And Pete, you know, for some of the stuff that he's sending out, it's no secret that Pete and Congressman Peter King and I believe another New York colleague of theirs will be squiring Rudy Giuliani around the halls of Congress. Pete is just flat out on the Giuliani team. And, okay, nothing the matter with that. We'll ask him about that. At 10:35, Carlos Quintanilla will talk some local politics, the politics of race, the politics of immigration with this local activist. And so all that, and we'll wedge a bunch of you in between and among all of that. 214-787-1820, 1-800-288-WBAP, pound 820, free call on the Verizon Wireless. So what'd you think of the speech? Let me put that question to the first gentleman we'll speak with. 26th District Republican Congressman Dr. Michael Burgess joins us from Washington. Welcome, sir. How you doing?
Good morning, Mark. Good to be with you.
Yesterday I said, you know, I'm going to watch the speech. I had every expectation that it was going to be a pretty unpleasant night of viewing. I expected to have big problems with the president on immigration, on alternative fuels, and I still do. But his comments about the war, and as he soberly and sincerely looked into the camera and told every member in that hall, whatever you voted for, you didn't vote for failure. I just fell back on my default setting that this man I voted for, and whom we all know a little better here in Texas, I so admire him for his toughness on the war. I so wish we were a nation united behind him. And I so wish that Democrats could put away some of the political vitriol and just give this commander-in-chief and the people under his watch a chance to do what they want to do.
I couldn't agree more. And he gave us an opportunity to glimpse, to imagine what failure looks like. What does it look like in 10 years or 20 years' time? And I don't know that there's a lot of people in that body that stop and put it in those terms, but it was instructive and it was useful.
When you gather for this, I remember I was kind enough, and I'll just
share with everybody. Congressman Burgess and Michelle Stein, who does communications room, called and asked if I could come yet last night. It just schedule-wise didn't work out, and boy, God, I wish I could have, because I was there 3-4 years ago, and learned a little bit about what it's like to attend the State of the Union. The speech is at 8. You pretty well need to get there at about 5. There's a little bit of security. And this was a particularly interesting one from the get-go, because for the first time a president spoke the words Madam Speaker. So tell me a little bit about that, about the notion of Speaker Pelosi and the mood in the room, because for your first time as a congressman, your party was not in the majority for a State of the Union. So talk to me about that for a minute.
Well, of course, all day long before, and in fact the week before, the buzz was that this wasn't going to be a very memorable State of the Union, that the president would have to wink into a house that he no longer controlled and deliver an unpopular message and then flake out. But the reality was he came in with a great deal of confidence. He diffused the tension was palpable in the room. Nancy comes in and gets in the chair. The other side gives her a standing ovation as she walks up the steps, as I guess you might expect.
Sure.
When the president came in, full of confidence, and I think got the speaker off guard by acknowledging her presence and the fact that it was the first time a U.S. president had addressed the House, started off with Madam Speaker, that was about the only time she smiled last night, but it was a photographic moment, clearly, because I think we saw it on the front pages of the papers today. But it was, you know, the spin all week was the president's going to have a tough time with this crowd. He's walking into a group of people who, at least more than half now, don't like him. His popularity is low. I didn't see till this morning into some of the clips of the autograph hounds and stuff as he was leaving the house. It was like he was a rock star.
And often from the other side, Dennis Kucinich looked like a groupie backstage at the Beatles at Ed Sullivan. Both coming and going, and I think, I don't know if it was Charlie Gibson on ABC or somebody said that Kucinich probably got more camera time than he will get during his entire presidential campaign because he made it so important to position himself, and it's kind of funny, and I'll tell you who else does it, is your Texas colleague in geography and politics, Sheila Jackson Lee is famous for being right there front and center to make sure she gets hand-clasping time with a president whom she ideologically reviles. What's that about?
I guess it's all about getting your picture on the news. Jesse Jackson Jr. always has a place on the aisle there. It really is pretty remarkable. You're quite correct. 5 minutes after they get that autograph, these are the same folks that are lining up in Statuary Hall to blast the president on their hometown radio show.
You know, it is true, but there's something, and maybe I'm just, you know, submitting to the kumbaya instinct. I think even if it's 60 seconds of niceness, I think it's nice if radical liberal Democrats are willing to shake the hand and share a moment of pleasantness with a president of the opposite party. Contrast that with the Democrat response, pardon me, delivered last night by Senator Jim Webb. The most noteworthy thing he's done since winning is to absolutely snub and insult the president at this reception for incoming senators. It's a famous story. We told it here. The president of the United States goes to a senator-elect Jim Webb, and parent to parent says, "How's your boy?" Because Webb has a son in Iraq. And Webb says, "It would be a lot better if he was home," or something like that, and refuses to be in the line, refuses to take a picture, refuses to shake his hand. You were there, so did you really get to catch the Webb response?
I did not. Of course, that's an impossible task to ask someone to do. I mean, you're taping the speech before the president's speech. You're taping it to a teleprompter in an empty room. It's, I mean, the optics are just so different.
Right. It'll never be as whiz bang a thing. But you do know what the president's going to say. The text of the speech was, you know, I think, was out by 3:00. Here's the only thing I would say is that, because it's a way of getting into a little bit of the battles that the president faces, first on the war and then on a couple of other things. Senator Webb, it was a contradictory paragraph that speaks volumes. He said, "We don't want a precipitous retreat from Iraq. that would only bring, you know, perhaps more, you know, more carnage, more bloodshed. But, and then like later in the same paragraph, mere seconds later, he was talking about how sooner rather than later, we need to get the troops out. It is tantamount to saying we don't want a speedy withdrawal, but what we do want is a speedy withdrawal.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to rectify that.
Yes, it will. It'll be impossible. And so what do we do? I mean, here we are in the party. A Republican Party that is fractured on how to feel about this president. There was no shortage of Republicans beating up on him, quite frankly, on Iraq, energy, health care. I mean, that's just a Republican way of being. We're all familiar with that. There's always blood on the walls in the Republican big tent. But for those of us that remain in Iraq constantly, remain on the list of believers, is there really anything we can do other than hope that the patriotism that Nancy Pelosi talked about actually kicks in and they are able to do what's right for America, and that is suppress their own distaste for the war, suppress their distaste for this president, and give him a shot this calendar year to make the war better?
I wish that were possible. Unfortunately, having seen their base from time to time, I don't know that it is going to be possible for them to compartmentalize and put that away long enough for us to see whether or not this new plan is going to be successful.
Yeah. Especially since every day takes us closer to the New Hampshire primary. The 2008 presidential race is underway, and so I often say, am I asking too much? And in that instance, it appears that I am. A couple of final things. Congressman Michael Burgess with us, a little State of the Union reaction and other things. Your colleague and our mutual friend Pete Sessions will be with us in an hour, and Pete makes no bones, clearly, about the fact that he's a Giuliani guy. He's going to help, work Giuliani's magic in the House to garner support among fellow House members for an anticipated Giuliani run. Is that normal, or is it odd for a congressman to step out front and say, you know what, this is my guy, and thus start to go to bat for a particular candidate this early?
I don't know whether it's odd. It's certainly happening with. As you mentioned, Mr. Sessions and Giuliani, Mitt Romney was through last week, and
who was on his arm?
Oh, he has a pretty significant number of already committed.
Who that I've heard of is a big Romney guy.
Well, Marsha Blackburn, who was on Energy and Commerce with me, I know she's talked to me about.
Right.
Trying to think in Texas, I don't know if there's any.
No, not to be Texas, just anybody I've heard of.
McCreary, who's Jim McCreary, who's the ranking member on the Ways and Means.
There you go.
Indiana, pretty powerful.
Well, you know where I'm headed here. Is this an inclination that you have to line up with somebody, or are you in more of a let's sit back and see how this goes kind of mode?
Well, I guess the pessimist in me looks at the polls and sees right now that if things don't improve in Iraq, it doesn't matter who we run and who they run. They win. And we probably lose additional House seats, which only puts the country in greater peril in my book. So I'm reserving judgment for right now. Clearly, if we get the right person at the top of the ticket, it can help us on the House side with our quest to retake the majority. But it may just be the world events are so stacked against us that it will not happen.
That is, boy, let me pause for one of the boldest and perhaps one of the most depressing observations, because you certainly may be right. And yet, maybe it's the optimist in me, or I don't know if it's political on my part. If the war is in the toilet, and by any objective measure, we have lost in Iraq, does that cook the Republican nominee in 2008 because he will have come from the same stable as President Bush? Maybe so, and there's a strong argument to be made there, but it kind of sort of depends on who the Republican is, isn't it? If it is somebody who steps forward and says, you know, all right, look, we know what doesn't work. Let me try something that does. And if that, you know, combined with what I think will still be a residual feeling on the part of the American people that Republicans are a little better with national security and defense than Democrats are, you know, I don't know, maybe I'm still, there's still a little spring in my step.
I hope you're correct. And the other thing is, with the new policy in Iraq, we're going to know very quickly.
We are.
Especially by summertime, whether or not al-Maliki is standing up and is a man of his word.
We really are.
If not, then the situation may look vastly different as we begin presidential campaign year, and Iraq may be a footnote in that campaign and not the headlines.
When are you, you're a frequent visitor to Iraq. Is there a reason to go more often now or a reason to go less often now, and what are your plans?
Well, I was there in July, and then, of course, as you know, things appeared to change significantly in August.
Mm-hmm.
I've been anxious to get back. In fact, I spent most of the month of December trying to get back,
mm-hmm.
but with every presidential hopeful from the Senate going over for a photo op, it was impossible. Now that we're in the minority, I've got to hitchhike with someone else's trip rather than organize my own. But we'll be I'm on the look for the next trip over, but. The reality is it is important for members to go over. What you see over there is different from what you see on the TVs back here. And in fact, one of the generals last night on CNN when I was watching the wrap-up, and he was with a group that was getting ready to deploy, and I know this wasn't what Anderson Cooper expected to hear, but this group getting ready to deploy was not so much worried that they were going into harm's way. They were worried as to whether or not they had the political support of the Congress and the American people. Isn't that something?
It is. These are very strange and interesting times. We're always so grateful, Congressman Michael Burgess, and thanks a lot. We'll be talking soon about something, I'm sure, and thanks as always.
Thank you, Mark. Bye-bye.
26th District Congressman Michael Burgess. 1 hour from now, less than an hour now, 10:06, Pete Sessions, and we'll talk to him about his thoughts about the speech, Republican out of the 32nd.